And so we're going to go to break here in just a second. Dr. Pamela Heath is going to be joining us when we come back, and we should be back in a few minutes. I'm Tuesday Miles with Portal Paranormal.
And Angela Thomas.
With Portal Paranormal. We're with Portal Paranormal Talk Radio. Be back in a few. And welcome back to Portal Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm your host, Tuesday Miles.
And I'm Angela Thomas.
Oh, well, I said that a lot better this time.
I swear
the cat stole my tongue on my exit there.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was a great interview.
It really was.
With Anna Maria. And thank you so much, Anna Maria, if you're still listening, for joining us today. And we've got our second guest on the phone. Angela, why don't you introduce her?
Well, we have a very, very well-accomplished Dr. Pamela Heath. Pamela, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back again.
You know, we're going to have to do a three-hour show so we can go over everything that you're about.
Good luck.
You need to stop that. You know, and then when I find, you know, I go to your website, which is www.pamelaheath.com, and of course I'm searching all over, but you know what caught my eye was the recipes, and I thought, she cooks.
She cooks,
and of all the stuff that she does, she cooks?
Yeah, I've been cooking since I was five. I love to cook.
Wow. Wow. Well, where do you find time, though?
Oh, everybody has to eat.
Yeah, but time to prepare it is another thing.
Most of them freeze well.
The fact of it is, it's like, can you imagine Einstein cooking? We just couldn't imagine you cooking.
Oh, goodness.
You know, I mean, and sorry that I have to, you know, compare you two to that. But, you know, I want to ask you, can you describe or explain what parapsychologist is or parapsychology is?
Parapsychology is actually a very limited scientific field. It studies only ESP, mind-matter interaction, and the survival of death. And that's all it really looks at. It was really formed in the late 1800s in England, originally by the Society for Psychical Research. At least most people think of that as the start of parapsychology. And it's been accepted into the National Academy of Sciences. So it's a real study. It's done formal controlled experimental research for over 100 years, probably about 125 years now.
Well, Pamela, let's talk about one of your books. I know you've written many,
mm-hmm.
but you have a book called Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. Can you tell us a little bit about what made you write this book?
Well, this is co-written with John Klimo, who was the head of my dissertation program when I was getting my doctorate in parapsychology. And, you know, anyone who's been a grad student knows you spend a lot of time in the office of your advisor. And he would often talk about an experience he'd had where he was asked to put together some information about what suicide said from the afterlife as a form of bibliotherapy for a woman who was thinking of taking her own life.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought was if she really knew what she was getting into, she might make a different choice and not be...
And why is that?
Because with the exception of assisted suicide for the terminally ill,
mm-hmm.
the spirit realm says there is no real advantage to committing suicide because you just have to go back and face those same trials and lessons again, and you might as well do it this time.
If people only knew that before they did that.
It's not like they burn in hell, but it's like it's not going to get them what they want. And certainly if you read the material of traditional suicides who take the lives of healthy bodies, they're just full of regrets. Yeah, just all
they
kinds
are.
Of regrets.
They truly are. And I have to say that I've had visited, you know, some of those spirits visit me on it, and they're just, you know, they maybe weren't happy campers here. Well, they're just not happy campers there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you take your psychological baggage with you. It's actually easier, I think, to let go of it on this side of the veil. But
that's true.
And the other thing that I always want people to know is there is help for you while you're alive. So if you're struggling, as many people are right now in today's economy, listen for your spirit guides. They'll try to talk to you in quiet moments between thoughts, whether it be in meditation and prayer, at night. Just try to still your mind and listen, and they will try to help you.
Absolutely. Or just grab the phone and call somebody.
Yes, the suicide hotline. You know, there's... You know, what I saw is a lot of these people say after they killed themselves, when it was too late to change their mind, they realized that there were people who loved them and who cared about them and that they could have turned to for help. And they regretted not having done so.
Oh, absolutely. And I can't tell you how many of the spirits come back and say, I made a mistake. Can I come back?
Yeah.
I made a mistake,
yes.
You know. And I'm like, I can't bring you back. I can't.
Either that or they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about crossing themselves over.
Well, some of them actually do it thinking there is no afterlife, and those are kind of the saddest in some ways because they keep trying to kill themselves over and over again in the afterlife because they can't get it through their heads that they succeeded.
Wow.
Oh, that, yes, absolutely. I really never thought about that, that they repeat the same thing over. Oh, you know what? I mean, having to do it the first time and being successful, but I do notice that there are some people who have tried it, you know, I mean, 5, 6, 7, 8 times, and they're never successful in doing it. Is it because they're meant to stay here?
I think there's different reasons for that. Sometimes I think it's luck. Sometimes it's that their unconscious mind, you know, doesn't want to follow through. Sometimes it's a cry for help, you know, in which case one hopes they get the help.
Right.
There's all different reasons. I sometimes it's just plain luck.
Well, Pamela, in the book you had listed the 10 commonalities of suicide, and number one was the common purpose of suicide is to seek a solution. And I think that when somebody is in such profound pain that the only solution to stop it right then and there would be to cross themselves over. What is your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I think that is a driving force for a lot of suicide. Unfortunately, what they find when they've crossed over is it doesn't get them what they want.
Right.
That they don't leave anything behind. There's still, and a lot of times it's like, even in this world, to a certain extent, we all have filters. We have colored glasses with which we view the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we distort things. And we may, some of these people felt like they had no friends or things like that. They felt very othered, very much us and them, or me and the rest of the world, and like they didn't fit in. And they're going to take all that with them to the afterlife, and they can, rather like that movie, When Dreams May Come, create a spot for themselves in the afterlife where they refuse to see those trying to help them, who love them,
wow,
care about them. And it can be very hard to get through that sort of mental blockade. That's where actually living mediums sometimes can get through to these people easier than those in the spirit realm.
Now, Pamela, you are a psychic yourself, is that correct?
Yep.
One of those.
So have you been able to use any sort of mediumship to speak to some of these people that have crossed themselves over?
Oh, absolutely. Now, I didn't include my stuff in the book because I was trying to present it almost like a journalist in the sense of distancing myself from the material. But, yeah, before and afterwards. And one of the things I found sort of interesting that I didn't think about is I've actually used the suicide book with those who have already died. And I just...
Really?
I take it with me so they can see what's in the physical plane, right? So they can see the book. And then I create mentally an astral version and I hand it to them to read. And I say, okay, this will explain what's going on. And I've run into more than one suicide who was really into technical stuff, and mm-hmm. they really loved having a handbook like this.
Good idea.
It's actually very, very useful.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but sometimes it has been said that, you know, when people who died, like maybe in a car accident or something, you know, and the saying goes, well, they pretty much were done with their lessons here. I mean, that was their
mm-hmm.
way out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that there's some suicides that might be because of that, the fact that they were really done with whatever lessons they returned for?
There was really only one person that I ran across in all the books I went through who claimed that he had committed suicide just to have a different way of dying. Now, I was never quite sure of that spirit, if that was really the truth,
mm-hmm.
or if he was, it was actually a very young spirit. It was someone who had died by asphyxia. He'd hung himself to get high. And he said that was what he had done, just to have a different way of dying, because he died every other different way. But nobody else said that.
Okay. Well, that's good to know about.
I'll make one other comment. We're talking traditional suicide. There were some assisted suicides who said that was part of their life blueprint.
Oh.
Yeah, there were some of those. Hopefully, one thinks perhaps to open up other people's minds to this.
There are more states that are allowing that to, how do you feel about that?
You know, this book kind of changed my mind on it. I still would not myself, as a physician, be comfortable providing euthanasia. It's just not something I personally would want to do. But I developed much more acceptance of it, and it's something I find, in an odd way, it's hard to even put this in words. It's like, as long as a person has really made a thoughtful choice, talk to everybody around them, everybody's in agreement, everybody's okay with it, and they are terminally ill, then it's an acceptable choice. It's certainly not considered murder by those in the other side. And that was a little bit of a surprise to me. I think it's for different reasons, though.
You know, if you have assisted suicide because somebody has terminal cancer and you know that they are going to eventually suffer with that before their passing,
mm-hmm.
that's more of a merciful act versus someone that might have some sort of, deep depression or fractured self-image.
Yeah, but there's also the thing that some of the spirits who did assisted suicide, a few of them said, you know what, I kind of missed out because I was supposed to go through a certain amount of suffering, or I was supposed to allow somebody else to take care of me, and I shortchanged myself here.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that's why they say, even in those cases, make a thoughtful decision. Don't rush into it. Consider it carefully.
Absolutely.
Now, in your book, you mentioned that I believe it was the Roman Empire that would allow people to state their case on why they wanted to commit suicide. Am I recalling that correctly?
Gosh, I think so.
Absolutely.
There are actually a number of places around the world, countries around the world now that do permit it. I think the Netherlands.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's like you said before. Is that are we playing the hand of God? And I've had others, even say that fact is taking their own life. Are you playing the hands of God? By doing this. I mean, this is supposed to be something that not so much always natural. We'd love to have every death natural, but then sometimes, in the suicide sense of it, it
needs to be well thought out.
I think it is the answer.
I guess I'm pro-choice would be the way I'd put it.
Pamela, let's talk about that a little bit more.
Okay.
For those people that really think it out,
yeah.
If you've got someone that is, in profound depression, or they've been humiliated, or they're trying to avoid shame, or whatever reason that they're deeply in that depression and ready to pass on,
I'd say no.
Are they capable, is the mental health there for them to make a correct choice?
No.
Versus someone that has terminal cancer that says, you know what, I'm not going to be here too much longer anyway. You see what I'm saying? Would they psychologically be prepared to make that decision?
Well, oddly enough, when you look at the terminally ill, most of them are not suffering from depression. It's one of those peculiar things. They usually aren't. I would say, just based on what the spirit realm tells,
mm-hmm.
that there's an enormous difference between taking the life of a healthy body, regardless of your mental state of mind,
mm-hmm.
and taking the life of one that's terminally ill and suffering.
Yeah, right.
Terminally ill and suffering, they don't really see a problem. They do say, still think it over. There may be reasons for this. Make sure that you and those around you are comfortable with this.
Pamela, where could our listeners purchase a copy of this book?
It's available anywhere,
okay.
Amazon or anywhere else. North Atlantic Books put it out. The thing I'd like to mention is a lot of people are overly sensitized or very sensitized to the whole topic of suicide, and they don't want to look at the book. I'd like to state that there's a lot to this book besides suicide. it talks about, for example, the stages of the afterlife, which all spirits go through, and suicides are no different from those who die by ordinary means in terms of the stages they go through. It's just that suicides seem to have a little bit more prolonged or difficult time getting through each stage. But the stages themselves are the same.
Very well said on that. On it. Now, I'm going to move us. Angela, do you have any more questions about the book?
Well,
because I want to move off the subject.
50,000 questions about the book.
Well, I got a lot to go cover here on this.
I understand. There's a lot to Pamela Heath. But one of the things that really caught me off guard, Pamela, was you said that suicide begins with a death wish that is directed toward others and then redirected towards an identification with the self.
Not necessarily, but in some cases.
In some cases.
Yeah.
Okay, and one other question, and then we can move on. And you mentioned about another common action in suicide is egression. What do you specifically mean by that?
Egression.
Egression. That suicide is egression.
Aggression. Is there a typo in there?
There might be.
It's aggression against yourself.
What? Egression? You
I think
it's
a typo. I think it should be aggression.
Sorry, I have to leave it up to you to find that.
Well, you know my editing
I swear.
Yeah, send me the page number. I'll tell the publisher.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was cute.
Well, you know, I think there's a lot more to the book than, you know, just the title. You know, it is a very large book, and certainly I think that anybody would enjoy reading the book and finding out a little bit more about it. What are your thoughts, Pamela, about those individuals versus group suicides? Because we're seeing more and more in today's media about group suicides. You know, we had, for instance, the Jim Jones documentary on in the United States last night on CNN, which I don't really feel was a group suicide.
I
would call
murder.
It a mass murder
versus
suicide. But what are the dynamics or what's going on in a person's head when they agree to cross themselves over with 100 other people?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with that othered feeling that I mentioned earlier. There's a sense that they don't fit in with others. They don't belong. Now, they may feel like they belong to that group, and then you get into issues of peer pressure. For example, schools are often very worried if one teenager, for example, commits suicide, that others in the school will do it. There's a sort of a contagious quality that's been noted at least since the days of Rome, if not earlier, and that's part of the reason there's a taboo against suicide. Because they're afraid that more and more members of society will just sort of follow suit.
Well, thank you very much. All right, Tuesday.
Okay, here we go. Now, somebody, or a bunch of ladies did a calendar this year.
Yes.
Okay, I have been waiting all night to mention this. Sexy mama here. You know, you did a calendar for
the.
It's called Paracharity Ladies of the Paranormal 2009 calendar.
Yes, and the proceeds go to help Florida cats. So.
That is so cool, and you can order this on Lulu.com.
Uh huh. Yeah, it's a huge calendar. I got to tell you, I was amazed how huge they are.
And so the on your website where it has the banner there, is that the picture that you used in it?
Yes, I am reclining rather playfully on a bench there.
You know, I just think because you know, I mean, I have to say that when people meet you, do they their first thoughts think you're conservative?
I think they think I'm very formal because I'm very shy.
Okay.
And so when I meet strangers, I tend to get very quiet and very formal, and it takes me a few meetings to sort of warm up and relax.
Okay, well, I just think it's great, and I wanted to really promote the calendar because I think it's so great. And you know, is there a website for the Florida Cat Rescue?
Yeah, there's a MySpace page.
Okay.
Paracharity.
Okay. And so, if you'd like to purchase a copy of that, you you can go to Lulu.com, or you can actually go to the MySpace Florida Cat Rescue. On that, is that what you said?
Well, the Paracharity and
Paracharity,
the link
that's what
to
it was.
The Florida
okay, great,
Cat
on
Rescue.
It. So, well, I'm so proud of you for doing that. Our ladies that we would recognize That's also on the calendar, too, on it. I want to go back on it. You were on the Queen Mary, I believe it was last year. Maybe it was in February.
I was unofficially there.
Okay,
you
were unofficially
there. I was an attendee. I was not a speaker.
Okay, well, you were there. And I was sorry because I was there also, and you and I did not get a chance to meet. I didn't know you were going to be there, and I'm sure vice versa on this. And so, but
I was a busy girl.
There was a busy... There was... I would say, whether not to call it event, but that you were in the pool room. I believe it was the pool room.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if I want to keep mentioning names, but there was a certain, you know, and he's kind of famous in as far as going into, that had gone into having spirit communication where the spirit entered his body.
Yeah.
And so you witnessed this, did you?
Yeah.
I'm going to pull teeth out of her on this one.
Yeah, you can tell. Yes, I did.
How do you feel about something that goes on like
this? I tried to talk to that spirit a little bit, although he didn't want to talk to me.
Okay.
And this was a spirit that I'd sort of been getting some messages about that was a real problem guy and trying to prevent other spirits from being able to cross over that wanted to, and just a very ugly customer.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started threatening people in the room, in the pool room at the time. And I don't think it's anything. I was sort of debating, what do you do at this point?
Right.
Because if you drive them out of the person channeling them, they could just pop into somebody else.
Right.
Who might be even less able to handle it. On the other hand, it was actively threatening everybody in the room. So what I did was I visualized flooding the entire pool room with light. And I noticed at that point it decided to withdraw.
Mm.
But it's sort of a interesting question. What do you do when you essentially have a large number of potential hostages?
Very true.
Nasty spirit. Does that answer your question?
Well, you know, I mean, hold on, Angela, one second. But my thought is that, you know, I mean, being that the fact is that, first of all, I mean, if you had not witnessed somebody doing this, actually, it can be kind of frightful because you're not understanding that this person who you're, you know, knowing and the personality is no longer there and that something else is inside of them.
Yeah.
And not knowing the fact is that, could this happen to anybody at any time? And is there certain responsibilities as a psychic or as a person who is involving themselves in ghost hunting should prepare themselves first before doing this?
Uh-huh. Oh, boy. Well, yes. I do think that if you're an experienced psychic, that you should definitely shield and prepare and that you have a responsibility to protect those around you. And that's... Well, you may have noticed when I was thinking about it, I was, you know, one of my key thoughts is how do I protect people so that the spirit cannot harm them.
Mm-hmm.
It can enter anybody who has basically a belief in the paranormal and who doesn't know how to shield for themselves or has very weak shielding. I think a lot of the people who go to these things sort of get a certain amount of entertainment quality out of the drama and being scared and stuff, and I think that makes them a little bit more vulnerable than if you're calm, because in some ways, especially ugly spirits, they can use fear and anger and things like that as a doorway in to sort of slide into you.
Mm-hmm.
And where you do your best is to be just very, very calm or very loving. Either one is pretty good protection. You can visualize yourself with white light. Ironically, the people who tend to be best protected besides a good psychic are the total skeptics. They don't believe it can happen, and a lot of times they can do a pretty good job of blocking it.
I could see that happening.
It's not part of their worldview. It just becomes an automatic shield.
Well, speaking of all of that, Pamela, you now have an agency called the Paranormal Consortium, is that correct?
Well, it's not an agency. It's a new organization which was founded by Donald Bates, who has a background as a police officer and private investigator.
Mm.
And what he saw in his work was that all this conflict between ghost groups and sometimes just a lack of knowledge or lack of resources. And so he got together a large number of people, including myself, Lloyd Auerbach, Annette Martin, Pete Haviland, the Ghost Divas, many others. And we're trying to create a site that will provide resources and information for ghost investigators. And this includes everything from legal do's and don'ts, you know, in different states, investigative skills, basics about parapsychology, psychic development. We also want to encourage research, ethical behavior, and cooperation between groups.
One
of the things we're going to be doing soon, and in fact probably within the next week, is we're going to be posting on the site a survey. And we're hoping that all kinds of ghost investigation groups and individuals take the survey and let us know what they want, what they would find the most helpful for us to provide. And we will do our best to provide those resources on the site.
Finally.
The link to the site is www.paranormalconsortium.com. And rather than spell that out, let me just say there's a link on my website. So
right.
If you can't spell it out, go to my website. Go to
as
the link
well
page.
As well as the Portal Talk Radio website.
Yeah, right. Yeah, or Portal Talk Radio. I think this is a much-needed idea. That's why so many of us have volunteered our time to do this. And hopefully we'll eventually get a lot of fact pages, resources, you know, where you can go for extra help, what groups are in what areas, all kinds of things potentially. But we're still in the process of getting this up and running.
I can't tell you how many clients that I get. I'm in California only, and I don't do one-on-one private investigations. I don't even, you know, I belong to several organizations and stuff that on it, but not just one of my own, and from people all over looking for help. And, you know, it's been, the fact is, and I'm very glad, and I embrace anybody out there that still is needing help, that you still can contact Portal for help, but having to go look for help for them on it. And, you know, I even have a client that's in Las Vegas, and unfortunately there was some help that was didn't help there. But anyways, but I have another team coming in all the way from Phoenix in to help them. But here's the thing on it is that I've been screaming for these teams to document, not so much, don't disclose the clients, but document the type of case that you're on, the entities that are involved with it. This way it helps us research and learn more about this, because you think in that they leave, well, you think they're leaving going someplace else, they go from place to place.
Yeah.
And if we don't understand this, then we can't be part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we may eventually get to having a sort of an e-newsletter where people can publish research and cases. And I'd also like to have a FAQ on there that helps people understand how to do research, because a lot of people tell me they want to do research, but when I start talking to them, they don't understand the basics of how to do it.
Right.
Which includes, among other things, doing your homework, finding out what has been done before you, what's already been proven before you. And that stuff's all available now on the Internet. There's all kinds of stuff available.
But don't let that stop you, because somebody has proved it before you, because as time changes, things also change. Studies also change.
Right, so, but I'm also talking about in terms of equipment,
what
does and doesn't work.
Right. Okay.
Or how I'd like to see some. I often see equipment misuse. People will be walking around, for example, with a natural EM meter, and you're supposed to set those down for 5 minutes before you take a reading.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's screaming because you're moving constantly, it's screaming because you're moving it, not because there's a ghost there. So I mean, there's some real basics.
I'm sorry, I have to say, because I did do a 30-day study regarding that, and I actually have Edison backing me up on it. Edison came out with their equipment, lent it to me. I had the head engineer of the EMF department work with me on it.
Great.
And so, which was great. In fact, we'll have him on the show in a couple of weeks. But to train people how to use the equipment right and how to understand how it's working right.
Yeah, and understand its limits, because we really don't have any equipment that actually measures ghosts. What we have is equipment that measures environmental variables, which may or may not correlate with a ghost.
Well, is your name on ghost hunting machines?
Yeah, well, we could get into PK and how much That's one of my problems, actually, with using EMF for getting yes-no communication going with ghosts. There's nothing to say it's the ghost that's changing your meter. It could be your own mind-matter abilities. We all have them. You don't have to die to get them. Everybody's got it.
It was funny because I was watching someone's video that they thought that they were communicating. They were holding a meter, and you look down the wrist, and you see a digital watch. And the fact of it is every time the wrist moves, you know, the EMF coming from the watch was setting the meter off.
Yeah. But it can also be your own mind-matter abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So it really becomes difficult to say what's going on.
Yeah. And that's you've written a book called Mind Matter. Is that correct, Pamela?
Yeah, actually, the book that's out now, it's getting a little bit dated, is called The PK Zone. And I am working on its updated version, which will update the research to this year. And it'll be called Mind-Matter Interaction, The Stories, Research, and Theory.
Mm.
It's about three quarters through, so don't expect it until next year or the year after. It just depends on whether I mainstream publish or self-publish this one again.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, it does say that on your you know, your website. Be patient. I've got these all this, you know, my sticks in the fire here. So.
I got sidetracked 6 months ago, but I'm getting back on track now, and I'm actually making some very good progress. Believe it or not, what has bogged me down a little bit is the joy of finding new research that I keep wanting to add. So there will be some whole new sections, new chapters, and I have a brand new neuropsychiatry textbook on frontal lobes I have to wade through to see what's the newest about the brain that could relate to PK, so good stuff.
Okay, now, let's not forget the fact that you're also an artist. You also do painting.
Yeah, sometimes.
You know what? You know,
and cartooning.
Listeners out there, please go to her site and look at her paintings. You know, I mean, they're amazing. I'm stuck on stick people still.
Ah, well.
But, you know, okay, now, I'm down with the guy, it's not the naked guy frontal, but the naked guy back. You know,
I only had one art class, and that art class had us painting a number of nudes, and I really have to say I enjoyed it, but ironically what I learned most from that class was that you can't forget the background. It's everybody likes to paint the foreground,
mm-hmm.
but you also have to think about what you put behind it. If you look at, for example, one of the earlier pictures is those dragons, the little dragons that are getting ready to steal the picnic from some
mm-hmm.
innocent soul. And originally that was just a still life of the fruit and the plate. And then I added in the background as a whole separate painting.
Well, I absolutely love these on it. I mean, you've got just a variety of, there's just so much on it. And the tunes, you call them tunes.
I like the cartoons. I've been cartooning since I was second grade.
I love cartoons. You know, what makes a person smile is to read a cartoon, you know, and follow the cartoons on this. And I have to say, I don't remember even seeing the cartoons before. Is this new? Why haven't I seen these?
No, it's been up quite a while. In fact, I get a lot of comments from people who have no interest whatsoever in parapsychology or psychic phenomena, but they love the cartoons. Especially ballroom dancers can really relate to the dancing cartoons.
Okay, and I'm looking actually on the artifacts where the lens test, the fascite. And, you know, and this is something to compare with, actually, on especially with orbs. Everybody thinks they have an orb in their picture, that it's spirit orb. And maybe it is, the majority of them are not. But, you know, also, too, is, you know, you've got the examples on here. I mean, even the snowflake.
Yeah, and as a psychic, I can tell you, there were no spirits there.
Mm. Wow.
There really weren't. It's artifact. I would have to say this explosion in orbs on the internet, and you're seeing everybody gradually and reluctantly come around to this conclusion, is due to how easy it is to get artifacts with digital cameras. They have very small lens apertures. It's very easy for dust reflections or lens flare or micro droplet of water to get on the lens, and you can even get CCD malfunctions.
Well, I'm sorry, Angela, go ahead.
Well,
no, go ahead.
And you have the light reflection artifact. I mean, just amazing, the list of artifacts. I could go on and on and
oh,
on.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, and maybe that you can answer this and you know what it's called. There's the type of condition somebody has where they see faces on everything. Do you know what that's called?
No.
I cannot recall it.
It almost sounds like a joke to me, but okay.
No, there actually is a name,
huh.
And there's actually a name to this condition where people see faces on everything. You know, the fact they're looking at it, they think, oh, there's a face on this. They're actually, okay, now I'm really going to have to start researching, looking for that, right? It's actually a condition.
Yeah, it rings a vague bell, but I can't remember
okay.
either.
Okay, Angela, your turn.
Well, Pamela, I want to lean a little bit over to the Office of Parapsychology. What is your role in all of that? Are you a researcher?
Yeah, I tend to do what I call experiential research, which is what it's like for those who do it, or in the case of mind-matter interaction, or what it's like for people in the afterlife. I'm looking at people's experiences rather than proof.
I see.
The other thing that I tend to, so I'm an experiential researcher, and whether they're living or whether they're dead, I'm looking at experiences.
So whether they're dead, meaning that you as a psychic approach it that way,
well,
information?
Even as a parapsychologist. When you look at suicide, what happens in the afterlife, that's basically a literature review.
Exactly.
That's a parapsychologist.
Exactly.
The only thing I was doing as a psychic was in the last third of the book where we had people channeling suicide bombers and suicide bomber guides,
mm-hmm.
I would listen in as a psychic, and it helped inform me what questions to ask.
How fascinating is that?
But that is, so for example, if I realized that the spirit was telling the medium something, that the medium wasn't telling me so I could get in words, I try to ask a better question
mm-hmm.
so that it would get in print.
So suicide bombers, did you find that rather jolting to your spirit when you did that sort of work?
No,
channeling?
But I was actually surprised how much they are like traditional suicides.
Really?
They don't have the regrets, but most of them are less far along in the afterlife. They seem to move at a very slow pace. Not so much because of how they died, as because they tend to be tightly wrapped in their own stories and beliefs.
So it's
very hard for them to be able to see a wider perspective, which you have to get to at some point. But what we normally did was we sort of eased people into it. We'd start by talking to spirit guides, and we met this just incredible, it's actually three guides, but they spoke as one, so it called itself Trio.
Mm.
And just very evolved, and that really is my favorite part of the book to reread, because there's some fascinating stuff that the Trio and other guides talk about that I just loved some of the concepts.
Well, it's definitely a fabulous book. That's Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. Tuesday?
Yes, I'm sorry, but, you know, I mean, she's got so much stuff on her website. You know, I mean, it really truly is. I mean, it's immaculate.
Oh, thank you, because I am my own webmaster.
You know, well, this is, I have to say, you know, I mean, if somebody doesn't know you and after they've been through your website, they would know that you're immaculate. that she is not a messy person. I tell you, you walk into her house, I'm sure it's spotless.
It's
because
tidy.
Because you're immaculate on everything, Pamela.
It's just tidy. It's organized. It's not immaculate.
It's perfect.
Pamela, can we talk about the PK zone a little bit? Is that on psychokinesis?
Yeah.
Now, psychokinesis, that's where one can mentally move things with their mind?
It includes all kinds of things. It can be mentally moving things. It can be spoon bending. It can be firewalking. So it can be used as protection from harm. It can be used as levitation, bilocation, the multiplication of food. I finally found that's going to be one of the new chapters in the new book is I found some formal research that was done by a dentist in the early 1900s and on multiplication of food, and he succeeded at it. Very, very interesting research.
Have you ever tried to move something, Pamela?
I have moved things. I've moved energy wheels and bent spoons.
Angela?
You know, when you talk about me as a psychic, what I think of myself best as is a healer.
Oh. As a healer?
A healer.
Well, you're a whole lot more than that.
Which is not something
that,
I advertise very much, because I don't want to get inundated with requests. But I actually trained for 6 months with a spiritualist healer in Casadega. And
wow, that is amazing.
She
so, you know, you really are very well-rounded, not only as a medical doctor, but in the paranormal itself. I mean, I think that you're covering many major aspects in it. And, you know, with working with Lloyd Auerbach and you doing your own work as well and writing on suicide and all aspects of that and psychokinesis, I mean, you are just really amazing, Pamela. And I have to say again to the listeners, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, great book.
Well, I try to think of myself as a bridge, actually, between parapsychology and psychics. Because a lot of parapsychologists, probably less so than it used to be, but they'll sometimes treat psychics as if they're objects.
Absolutely.
Because they're objects of study.
And
that is problematic. Not only have we lost a lot of wonderful people to research, but it also sometimes blocks their ability to succeed. And that's part of why my specialty is experiential, so that I can help people design better studies.
Right. Have you noticed that more in paranormal investigation teams are using less and less psychics on their teams?
Well, it's going to flow back and forth, but I would say most of the ghost investigation groups I've run into have at least one or two amateur psychics or sensitives in their group. I mean, it's really common. They may or may not admit it, but most of them have it, and if they will talk to you about it if you pull them aside.
Right. I know. I get my feelings hurt because they say, you can't come on investigations, though, because... You know, because I have my own little crew that comes with me. I can't help it, you know, or I pick them up on the way coming with me. And so the fact of it is that determining the difference. Is it the ghost that's here or did Tuesday bring it?
Well, you just have to ask them to step back. You know, I mean, and the other thing is, at least for me, is I know my guides are sort of a different level. You know, if you talk about spirit guides, they usually have a very high vibration.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So from the viewpoint of someone who's sensitive, it's like dialing a radio. You have to dial it down to a lower vibration to pick up the spirit.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're using your mind just like a radio tuner, dialing up and down the spectrum. And up high on the spectrum, well, those are spirit guides. You go down the spectrum, those are the stuck spirits. Those are the ones that you're looking for on an investigation, because they're the people who need help. And I do use the word people very carefully. Most of the spirits that you run into are human beings who have died, and they need help. They may be confused.
Yep.
They may be disoriented. They may be depressed. They're people.
Absolutely.
And
as I say, let me pull the couch up for you. Hold on. You know, because a lot of times, too, they just want to be noticed, or they just want to chit-chat, you know.
Yeah.
Or
they're like, what's going on? Why is nobody talking to me? I don't understand this. The other thing I've run into, you may have this problem too, Tuesday, is I'm seen by them as a very bright light, and some of them think I am the light, and I'm like, no, I am not the light. The light is
completely understand that. Oh, absolutely. And I have to say, I put hats on because of that sometimes, and whether it tones it down or not, it seems to tone it down some on it. But, you know, we only have actually a minute and a half left, and I'm so sad about that, because I could have you on for 3 hours more.
Absolutely.
It's always
a pleasure.
Well,
Pamela, you'll definitely have to come back.
Again,
anytime.
And again and again.
Anytime. I'm always happy to be back on your show.
Oh, thank you. We like that on it. I've had such a fun time with you
today. We can talk about remote viewing next time.
Oh,
I think I'm back
from
another remote viewing class with Lindsay.
Let me get the calendar out here, Angela. We could make her book right now.
That is one of my favorite things to do, Pamela, is remote view. So I would love to do a show on remote viewing.
There you go.
Well, quickly on it again, if you'd like to visit Pamela's website, it's www.pamelaheath, and you can find that information also, too, on the portal site. and, you know, and everything else that belongs to Pamela. I mean, you'll, you know, plan on being on her site for a couple hours because it's a lot. I mean, and it's excellent information. The fact that it's not wasted information, it's excellent information. Great sources on it, Pamela.
And you can print out the recipes.
Been there. Been there. And I have to say that I'm on that peppermint brownie.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Lots of good stuff on it. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight. And, you know, it's always a bonus for us to have you on the show. We love you to death.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, you're welcome on it. And so, everybody, that's the end of our show for tonight. It seemed like it went real fast, did it, Tony?
It did. It really did, Tuesday.
Oh, it went too fast on it. And so, well, everybody have a great week ahead of you. Make sure you take care of yourself and each other. And we will be back next Friday evening. And we will have Brad Steiger joining us. And so this is Tuesday Miles from Portal Paranormal Talk Radio.
And I'm Angela Thomas.
Everybody have a great week. God bless.